He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
Well, how do you say it? TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. It's Friday again.
Yes.
And it comes once a week, I think.
I think so.
And in the studio with us is Lydia Serrani, Governor David Paterson. Well, are we the only ones working in New York?
Basically.
It appears that way.
Basically. Yesterday, I think nobody works on Fridays anymore in the summer, in the city at least.
And I'm going out to dinner with the former Archbishop of South America for the Greek Orthodox Church. And he almost was in the studio. He must be in the studio next door.
He's blessing the studio, probably.
I hope so. We need one.
Yeah.
And
with this pandemic.
In addition, you want to hear this one?
Yes.
The current Pope, Francis?
Yes.
He worked together in Buenos Aires together.
Oh,
and they're
wow.
very, very close. And maybe sometime we can have him talk about how he was before he was Pope.
Mm, very nice.
And who do we have today?
We have Bill O'Reilly, a journalist, author, television, radio host, prolific author of the Killing series. What, 19, almost 19 million books sold right now? Killing the Mob is killing it online and everywhere that it's sold. What, almost a million copies, right, Bill?
I'd say a half million, Lydia, but, we're keeping the pressure on. We'll reach the million mark, but about a half million right now. So very pleased with Killing the Mob. Thanks for mentioning it.
Well, there's so many things happening, Bill. I understand that you're very concerned about this COVID.
Yeah, I wrote a column today. I usually file my column on Sunday, but because the panic is setting in, so we put it on BillO'Reilly.com. Anybody can go there and read the entire column. But basically, the gist of it is that we need leadership now with the COVID panic, and we're not getting it. Because Joe Biden is incapable of providing leadership on any issue. And here's the irony of the column after you read it. COVID destroyed Donald Trump. He would have been reelected if that pandemic had not hit because of the economy. Now, COVID, I think, is going to bring down Joe Biden. I think the way he's handling this new Delta variant is creating problems rather than solving them. You know, we talked Monday about violent crime in New York City, and I said to you guys, the sole purpose of having a police department, having a district attorney, is to protect the citizenry from violence. That's it. It's not to be a social worker, a psychiatrist, an engineer of socialism, whatever the far left wants it to be. That's not it. You have to protect people from violence. That's your job. As president of the United States, Joe Biden's job is to solve problems. And I asked my liberal friends, tell me one problem that the man has solved. The only thing he had going for him was the rollout of the vaccine, which was fairly smooth since he came into office. But now there's a hardcore group of Americans that will not accept the vaccine. And that's causing problems, and Biden doesn't know how to deal with it.
Hi, Bill. It's David Paterson. Biden said today that he wants to keep the schools open, and he didn't seem to be backing down based on the new information about the virus. That's the first time I've actually heard him make a statement like that in the whole, whatever, 7 months that he's been in office. Is he finally shifting back to the Joe Biden, who you might not like everything he did, but he certainly wasn't coming across as a radical all those years in the Senate?
Governor, he's doing what his handlers are telling him to do. They know critical mass is being reached in America. Look, it's very simple. Americans don't want to wear the masks again. Period. That's it.
I agree with you.
We were saying it on our show, it should be the people who should wear the mask are the people that are more susceptible to die from it. If you're vulnerable, if you're scared and you are immunocompromised, then you should wear the mask. Why should I have to wear the mask? When are people going to take some kind of personal accountability and responsibility? It's not my job to save your life.
and that's about 80% of the population. So the Biden administration knows that, and the governor asked a good question. Has Joe Biden finally seen the light here? And the answer is no, he has not.
But maybe the people who are talking to him, have they seen the light at all?
Well, they're panicking. They know what I said is true. I think they read my column. I think that, you know, he's right. Biden's going down just when Trump went down because of COVID, and we better stop the bleeding. But the bleeding won't stop until the president does an Oval Office address, not through a spokesperson or 3 seconds sitting at a desk making a comment. He needs to take questions from the press, number one. I mean, it's outrageous. This is the most important issue right now in America, and he's not taking questions from the press. What the deuce is wrong with you? You're the president. You're in charge. You're the leader.
Bill
Where's
O'Reilly,
the direction?
Bill O'Reilly, be nice. Otherwise, we're going to get Kamala Harris.
Well, Kamala yesterday, it took her 30 seconds after the CDC chief said, we might have to wear the mask. Kamala had the mask on. And then not only that, but she commanded the journalists that are covering her to wear the mask, too. And Kamala's been vaxxed, and so have those journalists. So what are you doing, lady? What are you doing?
Did you see the
Department of
Defense?
She doesn't know what she's doing. What was that?
Department of Defense, the head of it? He was walking off the plane outside wearing a mask over his face plus like a visor. What the heck was that?
They're virtue signaling. This is what the woke Biden administration does. So I, you know, actually don't mind if the armed forces would say, if you're active duty, you have to be vaxxed. I think that would be a smart thing to do because we can't afford to have a pandemic sweep through quarters of active military people. We just can't. So you have to follow orders. Here's the order. Get the vax. You don't like it? Resign. I'm fine with that. I'm not fine with it in the general population because we didn't sign up to take orders from the military, but I'm fine with it from the Pentagon. See, reasonable people can come up with a strategy. But right now, you've got panic.
Bill, I'm fascinated. How do you feel about mandatory vaccinations for school-aged children? Because a lot of people aren't.
It's unconstitutional.
Uh-huh.
It's unconstitutional.
Amen.
You can't do it. Even if you wanted to do it, you couldn't do it. So you have to get a measles vaccine to attend public school. If you want to walk into the school, you got to be vaccinated for measles, okay? You can do that. So if the parents say, no, I don't want my kid being vaccinated for measles, they can either homeschool the kid or send the kid to private school that doesn't have that, okay? But you can't say to parents, you got to get your kids vaccinated for anything. That is, at this point in our history, an established fact. And again, the CDC is so muddled. The big problem is there isn't one credible source coming out of the medical community. Fauci's finished. Fauci killed himself by trying to play both sides against the middle and deceiving people about the American investment in the Wuhan lab. Now, everybody knows that Fauci's not an upfront guy. He's done. There's nobody else. There's no one else who can speak with authority on behalf of the medical community. Biden is running. As I said, why wouldn't you have a press conference on an issue as important and personal as this? Why would you not answer questions?
Yeah, very good.
But he isn't.
You have a very good point.
Very good point. I had a discussion with our in-house doctor the other day, Dr. Mihalos, actually this afternoon, and 165 million people have been vaccinated in America. And of the 165 million people that have been vaccinated, I think it was like 1,200 that have died. And I said to him, well, 1,200 out of 165 million, 1,200 might have died anyway.
Right. Just through the normal course of statistics.
I don't think there's any reasonable person, and the word reasonable here is in capital letters, that feels that the vaccine that was developed under the Trump administration is ineffective. It's effective. It protects you. But you've got groups in America on the far right, African Americans, that don't trust the government. So they're not going to take the vax. They're afraid. It's fear. What Biden's job is to persuade these people, not threaten them. Persuade them that if you do this, you're doing a good thing for your country, for your family, and for yourself. So you're going to have a segment that's not going to cooperate. And those people are not going to be able to live a normal life. They're not, because you're going to start to see the restaurants and the movie theaters and the plays and the sports arenas. They're going to start to ask for that vax card. And if you don't have it, you're going to be denied entry. And that is not unconstitutional. That is perfectly legal.
Now, the other thing that nobody's saying is they're calling this the COVID-19 virus Delta portion. It might be just another flu. I mean, I don't think they know.
Whatever it is, it's spreading fast. You know, my line is that Joe Biden, when he heard about the Delta variant, thought it was a flight to Atlanta. Right? He's not really engaged here. He's not, you know, I mean, I really fear for America because, and this isn't a personal or ideological or party thing about Joe Biden. I gave him a chance. All right. He's been in office 6.5 months. He has not solved one problem, and he's caused an enormous amount of damage. When you have millions of foreign nationals coming in here, some of them have COVID. And they're just flooding into this country because of Joe Biden. No one else.
And he's not checking them. He's not checking them. Nobody's checking them. They're just coming in.
Could it be a coincidence that we have the Delta variant, and now we have all these migrants flooding the country?
Bill, you've made some great points. I want to ask you, though, about today's CDC report that in this area in Massachusetts where 75% of the people who got the Delta variant were already vaccinated. Do you accept that, or do you think we need to hear
it might be
other...
a different kind of flu, David?
Well, yes, I read the report, and I accept the report because the people that they tested were all in close quarters. But they weren't hospitalized, and it wasn't life-threatening. It was basically they caught the virus.
Right, and I believe one of them got very sick, but nobody died.
Nobody died.
That's wonderful. Nobody died.
The one that got very sick, and correct me if I'm wrong, had pre-existing conditions all over the place.
That's right.
And didn't have a strong immune system. Look, the fact of the matter is, and this is what President Biden should be saying, if you take the vax, you are protected about 90%. From the virus. I'll take those odds, Governor.
Yeah.
I'll take the odds from myself, from my family, and my country.
I agree with you. Bill O'Reilly, can we ask you one more question?
Sure.
The New York Times today advocated that non-citizens should be allowed to vote. I mean...
Yeah, that was an op-ed, right.
That is mind-boggling to me. I mean,
were they just floating it? The New York Times? I mean, I don't even know what to say anymore.
Well, I'll give you one you haven't thought of. They're a debtor to Carlos Slim of South America.
Maybe. But the editorial board and the op-ed editors of this newspaper and the Washington Post and the Boston Globe and the LA Times, okay, all want quasi-socialism in America. When I say quasi, that means Sweden socialism, Netherlands socialism. That's what they want. They want single-payer health insurance. They want income redistribution down the line. The only way you get that is to flood the zone with foreign nationals. You don't get it with the traditional American voter. Where do you see what happens next year in the midterms? These people are going to get blown out like it's going to be almost a record unless something happens in the next 15 months. But if the election were held tomorrow, Monday, whatever, the progressive left would get smashed because people are going, you know, I don't like these people. I don't want the woke culture. No problems are being solved. I got dead people in the streets every single day, and nothing's being done about it. The solution is put a social worker in the back of a cop car. That's their solution. So I know what's going to happen. I know. But at this point, the New York Times, when somebody says, well, they wrote this, the New York Times, they look at them and say, okay, don't you know why? Don't you know what it is now? And then, you know, some people do and some people don't.
Bill, a lot of people believe that this kind of second wave, this second pandemic, is just kind of another ruse to steal this election away, the 2022, and then everybody can't vote in person. And look at that. They're asking IDs for everything except for voting. What do you think about that? And then also another, this is a two-part question. Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, if Biden had given Trump credit for the vaccine, probably more people would take the vaccine. So what do you think?
Well, I don't know about that. I think the people who don't want the vaccine are hardcore. They're conspiracy people. They don't trust the government. I have a couple of friends who are like that. I mean, they're loons. I tell them that. I said, do you realize you're what a loon? But the essential point here is this. We live in a fast-moving society, all right? Things change and change and change. The latest challenge is a resurgence of the virus. Why should anybody be surprised? This is the most vicious virus the world has ever seen as far as contagion. There's never been a more contagious virus than this. Why would you be surprised that among unvaccinated people, and the number is 98% now, 98% of the new COVID cases are among unvaccinated people. Why would that surprise you?
It actually doesn't.
All right? It's logical. All right? But those of us who are responsible people and are vaccinated, we're not going to wear masks. We're not going to do this. There's going to be a mass uprising. Newsom in California is going to get booted next month. They're going to boot him out because of COVID. He's going to lose his job. And that'll be, wait till you see what happens.
Does he get to keep his mask?
Absolutely.
He deserves it.
He ruined it.
Bill, if he loses his job, does he get to keep his mask?
Well, he gets to go to the French Laundry anytime he wants now. And, you know, get a lot of time on his hands.
Bill O'Reilly, thank you.
People don't want an authoritative government. They don't want to be told when they're vaccinated that you have to go back to the horror that we experienced last year. They will not accept that. And that's what Biden and his handlers figured out today.
Bill O'Reilly, thank you so much for calling in and keeping all the American people informed. And God bless you and God bless America.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
By the way, real quick, there were 22 states in the United States that did have non-citizen voting. This pretty much ended around World War One. It's been brought up a few times before. Seattle, Washington tried to do it in school elections. I've always thought the only non-citizens who should be allowed to vote are those
Puerto Rico
who are in, well, they're citizens.
Guam.
They're citizens.
How about Guam?
They're also citizens.
Guam, yeah, Bloomberg.
The people who should be allowed to vote are those who are serving in the military while they're not yet citizens of the country.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to come back with Larry Kudlow.
Celebrating 100 years.
77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night Show. I'm Lydia Serrano here with John Katzmatidis and Governor David Patterson. And we just got two great guests that just came into studio with us, right, John?
Yes. We have the former Archbishop of South America for the Greek Orthodox Church, Archbishop Tarasios, and Father?
Father Christopher.
Christopher. And where is your parish, Father?
St. Paul's in Hempstead, New York.
Hempstead, New York. That's a good place.
And you know, Father, I'm from Hempstead, New York.
How are you?
Did you know that?
No, I did not.
No, I went to school in Hempstead, New York. I went to Hempstead High School. I know right where St. Paul's was because I went to Fulton School.
Okay.
Which was
wonderful. It's a small
right,
world.
Right
small.
By.
Introduce Larry.
We have Larry Kudlow on the line. I mean, does Larry even need an introduction? Who doesn't know who Larry Kudlow is? He's our
the
financial
whole world
guru.
Knows it. The
absolutely.
Whole world knows.
Absolutely.
Larry.
Hi, everybody.
How are
hi,
you?
Hi. I'm fine, thanks. How's everybody?
Good. How is the roller coaster of the markets treating us?
Well, look, markets were down today. They were down a bit this week, but they're still holding the high ground. You're still, you know, they lost a little bit after hitting 35,000 on the Dow, but there's a lot of powerful numbers today. We're now through above the pre-pandemic levels of the whole economy. GDP is strong. Workers are getting paid. Worker wages rising 3.5% year on year, so they're coming back very nicely with good productivity, 2.6%. Profits are roaring. Inflation is too high, 4% year on year, although it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. And there may be a let up in inflation coming. Just today, Chicago purchasing managers were very strong, way above expectations. I mean, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We got the infrastructure bill. I could do without all the green stuff, which inflated the cost to taxpayers. And the big thing is going to be this budget reconciliation bill, which, if it goes through, will inflict enormous damage to the economy because of massive tax increases, big regulatory takeover by the government in the name of the Green New Deal, more entitlements, more transfer payments, no work requirements, no employment incentives. I mean, that's going to be a turning point, but we won't have that vote on reconciliation probably for quite some time. So for now, sit back and enjoy it. You know, the market corrected a little bit this week. It's a good time to buy the dip.
Well, I think the I personally feel the bank stocks are very, very strong. They dipped, and I think they dipped more than they should have, and I think they're great buys.
Thing about banks, it's kind of interesting. Banks have so much money, so much cash. They have more money than they know what to do with. And they're actually giving some of it back to the Fed. I mean, the whole system is flush with cash at virtually zero interest rates, at least at the short end. So it's kind of like free money. So if you put free money together with record profits or earnings, you got yourself a good stock market, and I'm sure bank stocks will do fine, but I would be a buyer across the board. You know, I always say buy the index, buy the S&P 500 index. You're buying the whole country. Actually, you're buying the whole world for that matter. There's a boom going on around the world. So enjoy. Enjoy.
Larry, do you think that the fall in the market or the sort of volatility is actually coming from issues that are ancillary to finance? You know, just how people are feeling about living in the country and our culture and the virus and all other types of indicators as opposed to financial ones.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't see there's much volatility. The VIX index is very low. So you get, you know, ups and downs, but it's within a narrow range. I think the market could break up on the upside. I don't think this rally is finished yet at all. Again, profits are the mother's milk of stocks. Go back to basics. Profits are everything. So if you have cheap money, big profits, more cash than you know what to do with, it's a pretty good combination. I wouldn't want to be out of the stock market. I'd want to be in it.
Is there any particular sectors? I know that you're very much concerned about the government pushing the green crisis.
Mm. Which I can't find. What is the green crisis? I love this. That was in the summary notes from the White House description of this infrastructure deal. They call it the climate crisis. Do you know that we're beating the Paris Climate Accord targets? That since 2005, carbon emissions in the U.S. have dropped 25%.
Wow.
Now, the Paris Accords said, using 2005 as a base, that carbon emissions, the target, should drop by 25% by 2025. We got there in 2020. No other country is even close to us. So I'm searching for this climate crisis. I'm looking everywhere. I'm looking outside. I'm looking inside. I'm looking in my top drawer. I cannot find the climate crisis. We have, using fracking and horizontal drilling, with the revolution of natural gas, bringing down costs, bringing down carbon emissions. It's a terrific story, and I wish they wouldn't mess with it. Now, they're going to mess with it. And if that happens, the consequences may be quite dire. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it later in the year. But I'm just saying, all these subsidies, there's a lot of green money in this infrastructure bill, okay? Probably not quite half of the bill is green. And if you include mass transit subsidies, that clinches it. But you know what that does? That makes all power and electricity very expensive. And they have to do that because wind and solar is expensive, particularly wind. So you want to go renewable, whether it's the electricity grid, whether it's buses or automobiles, you're making them very expensive by pushing down carbon content. And that's going to hurt middle-income Americans, and it's going to hurt lower-income Americans. You know, the Trump policies gave us cheap and plentiful energy, and the biggest beneficiaries was the blue-collar middle class and the lower-income classes. And Biden's this so-called climate crisis, which I can't find, will raise all these costs and really do a lot of damage to the very people who can least afford it.
Larry, I understand our oil output in America is down from 14 million barrels at the high, but down to 12 million barrels.
Yeah, well, the numbers I looked at recently, John, we hit about a peak in 2019 at about 13.5 million barrels a day. And in 2020 and the first half of 2021, through July, actually, we've been hovering just over 11 million. And, you know, that's really too bad because obviously demand has picked up as the, you know, businesses reopened and the vaccinations have, you know, largely done away with the pandemic. So you're not seeing the pickup in oil output that you'd expect to see. You're not seeing it in natural gas. And, John, that's because the government is leaning on these companies. They're leaning on them. And yes, the companies are afraid to make investments. If they were producing normally, even, let's say, another million barrels, say they got to 12.5 million barrels, John, that would reduce the price, the global price of oil, and would reduce the price of gasoline, which is, what, $3.50 a gallon, something like that nationwide. So who gets hurt? Again, people who drive ordinary
I'm disappointed in President Biden's first 7 months, 6.5 months in office, and it's hurting the country. And if Trump would have approved that pipeline from Russia to Germany, they would have hung him for treason, I guess.
Yep. Well, yeah, it's funny. I was with President Trump last night. We had a terrific dinner of some of the senior people. And that subject came up. You know, the Bidens are giving Russia the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, but they're taking away from the U.S. the XL Keystone pipeline, and they are preventing drilling in Anwar, both of which approved during the Trump years and reversed during Biden. And I'm telling you, John, gasoline is at least a buck too high because of this.
They're hurting America. They're hurting the poor. They're hurting the middle class by causing price of gasoline to go from $2 to $3.50. And Larry Kudlow, we got to take a break. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
Keep your chin up, though. We'll work through it. It's going to be okay.
God bless. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to come back with Dr. Peter Michalos. That will give us an update on the COVID crisis.
This is the news and talk station of New York with John Katsimatidis.
Tell us what's going on.
Real New York, 77 WABC.
This is John Katsimatidis, TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. And we're here in the studio with Lydia Serrani, Governor David Patterson. And we have two special guest stars. And we have the former Archbishop of South America, His Eminence Archbishop Terrasios. And he worked with the current Pope.
Pope Francis.
In Buenos Aires.
You knew him when he was Jorge.
And you knew him when he was when he was a priest, or when he was a cardinal. Was he a cardinal then?
He was a cardinal then, yes.
Wow. Is this a mic on? Yeah.
Oh, he's got to get closer to it. He has to move the mouth.
And tell us about the Pope when he was a cardinal.
Well, Pope Francis today is exactly as he was back then, a very humble man, a very real man, simple, close to the people. So it was somebody that I could really get close to, as coming from a situation where I needed some support. I consider him my elder brother.
And do you still talk often?
Well, we don't talk very much, but we communicate in writing. Or when I get a chance, I'll go to Rome, and I get to spend a couple of days in Casa Santa Marta, and we'll have dinner together. We can walk together and have a private audience together.
That is wonderful. And also, we have Father Christopher of the Hempstead Church. Is that correct, Father?
Yes, St. Paul's Cathedral in Hempstead, New York, yes.
And you do wonderful things. It's a very big congregation of the Greek Orthodox Church.
Yes, it is. It was the first cathedral out there in Long Island, and was the main church back in the 50s. And then, so we service a lot of people in the area.
Thank you, Father, and thank you for stopping in. And
you're welcome.
Hopefully, we have a nice dinner tonight.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
And on the phone, we have Dr. Peter Michalos, Dr. Peter Michalos will give us an update on what's going on with the new COVID crisis.
Great to be here with you guys tonight. What an amazing team you have there. Your Eminence, Father, Lydia, Governor, the whole team is there. But what's interesting and what's happening is that we keep talking about this virus as if it's the same one. And what we learned today from those documents released in the Washington Post is that they, to quote them, it acts almost like a new, different, novel virus. And we're seeing that in the clinical. I've been speaking to frontline doctors in urgent cares. They say this one is different because it's 60% more contagious. 83% of the cases nationally are represented by the Delta variant. And it's presenting with less loss of smell and less cough, but it's presenting with high fevers, diarrhea, severe headache, and congestion. So this thing is behaving very, very differently. And, for example, as of July 26th, 163 million people have been vaccinated. And there have been, in vaccinated people, 6,239 hospitalizations and 1,263 deaths among vaccinated. But the bottom line is that if you're vaccinated, you have a 98% chance now of not dying. So that's why the importance of vaccines. And the other thing is that, for example, in Texas, there were 9,000 deaths since February, and only 43 of the deaths were in vaccinated people. So you still have a much better chance of surviving if you are vaccinated. And the thing you were commenting, I heard earlier in the show about children's immune systems are a bit immature. And that's one of the reasons why it passes through you. And people think you die of the virus. We actually don't die of the virus. We die of our own body attacking the virus, creating this massive inflammation, filling our lungs with this fluid that they call the cytokine storm, and also this exaggerated clotting that we're seeing. Children with their more immature immune systems, they don't react as much. And also, if you know somebody who takes immune drugs, for example, if they had a heart transplant or a liver transplant, they say, I had no reaction to the vaccine. Why? Because they're on immune suppression drugs. So their immune system is saying, relax, don't get too excited, don't attack the lungs. You don't need to have a cytokine storm. So that's the explanation on why those things are happening. And I'm really looking forward to the oral antiviral pills from Merck and from Pfizer announced last week, and also Innovative Pharmaceuticals, another company. All three are working on an oral pill. And whoever comes out with that first is going to do really well. And you'll test positive and you'll take the pills right away, immediately, and you'll be able to get through this much better, just like what got us out of AIDS, an oral antiviral cocktail. Well, and the guy who invented that is up at Columbia University.
Doctor, in 2017, 2018, 2019, the normal flu, we used to have 80,000 people die normally every year. Isn't that correct?
Yes, we a lot of them actually, you don't actually die directly from the flu, but yes, you get secondary pneumonias, and that's what kills a lot of the people, the secondary bacterial pneumonia, as one of our friends' wives recently just had influenza. They thought it was COVID. They got tested, and it was actually the pneumonia, and they got IV antibiotics. But yes, of course, all viruses will kill people, but this is in the news now with social media, the internet. We're watching this every day, play by play. We had a big flu in 1967, 68, the Hong Kong flu. We didn't even hear about it. Woodstock was a super spreader event back then, but nobody talked about it. And now it's like every social media, every news outlet. So it gets a little bit magnified, but you know, it is real. It is a problem and we will get through it, but it's a tumultuous time. And what I'm telling people is what I'm doing. You know, if I go shopping right now, I'll wear a mask. If I went on an airplane, which I'm not, I'm only doing staycations, I'll wear a mask, or in a mall. Because you know what? If I'm in a room and somebody has it, and instead of getting, the mask doesn't protect you 100%, but instead of getting, let's say, 1,000 viral particles, when I get hit in the face with a blob of virus, I'll only get hit with 100 if I'm wearing a mask. So that's how I look at it. But this will pass, and technology and science will get us out of this now. Antibodies are working great, too.
We have a minute left. Any other advice to all Americans? And wash your hands often, just like before. And take your vitamin C, take your
vitamin
D, and zinc.
A lot of doctors recommend D, zinc. Quercetin is a natural polyphenol that helps the immune system. And those are things that you can do to help boost your immune system. Eat healthy, stay hydrated, and, you know, use common sense.
Well, Dr. Peter Michalos, thank you so much for coming on and advising all New Yorkers and all American people. And God bless you, and hope we catch up again real soon.
Thank you, and thanks for the great team getting the truth out tonight, as always.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back right after the break. And I think Bo Dietl wants to come on and tell us a few things.
Celebrating 100 years of real New York.
77 WABC.
Real New York.
Welcome back to the John Katzmitidis Cats at Night Show. I'm Lydia Serrani here with John Katzmitidis, Governor David Patterson, the Archbishop. I like the way you say the Archbishop's name, John.
The former Archbishop of South America, Tarasios.
And then we also have Father Christopher Constantinides. No wonder you just go by Father Christopher. He's the Greek Orthodox Cathedral of St. Paul there in Hempstead, New York. Now, Archbishop, you had mentioned that you know personally Pope Francis. And I asked you during the break, what's something a little factoid that people would be kind of surprised about Pope Francis? What is that?
Well, I consider Pope Francis, as I said, my elder brother, because he was there for me when I first went to South America and needed some moral support and some spiritual support. But then as becoming friends like that, you know, you get to know each other on a very personal level. He would pick up the phone and call me directly. He would never go through the secretary or never go through somebody else. He would just say hello, you know, hola, soy cardenal, I'm the cardinal. And whenever he needed me, I was there to support him. Then I would go and visit him in Rome. It was important for me to be at his enthronement when he was first elected, and I was invited to go there along with our ecumenical patriarch Bartholomew. He came down this white he came on the staircase dressed in white, and I came down the other staircase, and he saw me from afar, and he said, Tarasio. And we hugged, and we embraced, we cried. And then I said to him in very plain Spanish, I said, Your Holiness, what did you do? He said, it wasn't I. He said, it was they. They did it to me. You know, they elected me. Mm. There was no escaping. So there we are sitting at the dinner table, and I'm looking at him. I'm a bit concerned. You know, he looked like he put on a couple of pounds. He looked like he was tired. And I said, in front of everyone, I said, Your Holiness, is it proper to reprimand the Pope? And everyone went, oh, my God, how can he speak like that? And His Holiness said,
That's a wonderful story.
His Holiness said, "What Taras says, what is it? And I said, well, I think you've put on a couple of pounds. And you look tired. I'm worried about you. He said, not to be worried. He said, I'm fine. He said, I can't go to the self-service line and eat as much pasta as I used to because now they've limited me to a small plate of spaghetti and that's all they would allow him to eat. So these are personal things that very few people get a chance to experience.
Well, thank you so much, Archbishop. And on the line with us, we have Bo Deedle. Bo, one tough cop. I just saw you the other day. I'm sure you got something that you're fired up about. What's stuck in your craw?
Well, first of all, I'm very honored to be out with these esteemed people and the governor and John and everybody. But, you know, we had a case that happened in Newark, New Jersey. Giovanni Crespo, he was an officer, and I know we don't have too much time. On January 28th, a car was pulled over by a female officer, Valerie Sanchez, pulled over a car with two felons in it. When she was talking to them, she noticed one of the men had a gun on the seat, and he was reaching for it. Just the lucky thing that the other cops were responding. When they responded, they sped away, and now they chased it. The chase was on. Giovanni now and his partner chased them. They tried to pull the car over several times, and then the second time, they managed to catch up. Giovanni got close. That's when one of the passenger held a gun up and pointed at him. Giovanni fired his gun. They then chased him for another almost 3 miles at 70 miles an hour, where they were able to capture them, and he fired his weapon again. What happened was the officer was locked up for manslaughter, and now he's facing life imprisonment. And this is something that's going on right now across our country. This is an officer, young man, with four beautiful young children that he has, and now he's facing life imprisonment for doing his job. And I'd like to reach out, and I'd love the support of everybody with the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, and it's Officer Giovanni Crespo.
Well, if you write, anybody. You know, I'm chairman of the Federal Law Enforcement Foundation. If you write us a little memo, I'll bring it up to the board and see how it goes.
So, Bo, the Officer Crespo fired in response to being shot at himself?
The gun was pulled on him, pointed at him, then he fired at self-defense. Now, the two people, one was killed, and the other one then was, he got out of jail, and then simultaneously, he was shot again in a drug deal again, and he ended up dying. He got hit by a car, and he was run over by some other drug dealers. So these were two bad critters. He had dozens of years in jail. Now the officer doing his job, Giovanni Crespo, is now facing life imprisonment.
All right. Thank you, Bo.
That case should get dropped.
And Bo, we're going to have you on again next week just to talk about it a little bit more, but we're out of time. And Bo, thank you for coming on. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, too.
And Governor Patterson, thank you for being here. Lydia Serrano, Your Eminence, Terracios, thank you for being in the studio with us and for the great stories you tell us. Father Christopher, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And God bless New York. God bless America.